Miss McIntosh, my darling, chapter 75. So I listened to Esther Longtree's tale of woe, listened all morning as perhaps the sky turned from the gray of the morning to the gold of the afternoon, listened perhaps through many mornings, for I was wrapped in mournful memories, and perhaps it was I who had lost count, did not notice whether the spring advanced, or whether there were waxen buds upon the trees. "Woe, woe," said Esther Longtree, but nothing could tether grief, for it wandered over the widest pasture man might ever know. Often she pondered upon difficult questions, some legal, some illegal. Her eyes staring at the sky and marble children often was raped when there was no one present but a ghostly, mean child who tore at her hair. She could not always blame men for her disappointments. Sometimes she blamed the child, too. Who indeed had ruined her circulatory system, her arteries, her veins, her branches, her amplitude, her echoes, her silence, her quail rustling among the purple shadows, her raped, wounded sky, the whole world? She would ask this when she had given birth to nothing, for otherwise she was happy, growing, swelling like a face under water. She could not really complain if people would only leave her alone. She was going to be a mother. Still, as she sometimes realized, vaguely smiling, it might be a benign tumor, this growth, and it might not be motherhood, her desire, her love, her organized labor, her compensation for so many ghostly poles, for so many sickly fingers playing upon her, so many puny fathers who remembered her when they were dying. Motherhood, not growth, was what she wanted with all her heart, which was filled with sad sounds and their echoes. She would see little children running along the street. She would hear her voice calling to them. She would imagine that they were all flocking around her. She saw herself among them. She would feel as if she were on the verge of something big. But maybe, she would sometimes realize, it was only a benign tumor and not a conscience. Maybe it was only the past spreading its fingers. It could have been the future, too, and that was different. On some wretched day, she might vomit it up. What was this growth like a hard green apple pressing against her wearied brain at night, against her heart roaring? And if it was only growth as it seemed, why could she feel her conscience in the little shadow box or in his watery grave floating among water lilies? These sad small doubts had always passed away after a few hours. Then, of course, they had returned, propped up on ice floes. It was something she could tell to no one, yet so great was her faith, nothing could discourage her, and she would be pregnant of the scar if the stars fell like leaves upon a rotted world, if it was true. Her faith was great, even though murder had grown, casting a shadow greater than hers, ever since this detective raped her and left her to face the disgrace. She had had to get even with him by telling him that he was going to be a father when, of course, it was already dead. Besides, she had wanted to deceive a detective, to mystify him who solved the mysteries. But she had wanted partly to deceive herself, too, though she had known that the child in her womb was dead, for the leaden bells had sounded under her heart when the father first came here. That was before the detective came. He should have been loving and should have asked her questions as to her health and age and the sad poles. She had got mad because of his indifference to the mystery, for something in her had yearned to be questioned by him, to be dragged forth, even though she herself would have been silent and answered no questions. Something in her had yearned to express itself in spite of her, to tell all, to bear witness, to give her up to the police and the detective and the jury. This witness being she did not know what, but it had wanted to speak, and maybe it was some older fetus hidden in a pool or some older child, black as a blackbird, winging across the heavens. It had wanted to tell on her, but she had held back her cries and testimonies and not borne witness against herself, for it would have been illegal to do so, and her own father was the policeman. Only when she was so sure that no one was near had she ever cried aloud, though from a distance of only a few yards, of course, her cries might sound like a lost child crying for its mother, and sometimes they were heard, of course, by someone, as on that hot summer day when a fisherman had come running down the hill to see where the child was hidden among the clanking reeds, but had found it instead Esther Longtree, down on her knees, red-faced, dry-eyed, screaming for help, beating the child in her womb long, long ago, when she was young and frightened, her mind not set, tremulous and undecided. She had beaten the child so hard, and when it came, it was as soft as a marsh butterfly. She should have waited for it. The fisherman had helped her to get rid of the child, for it was dead, something so indefinitely hers, yet stubborn as she was, something so small and frail and lonely. Its fists clenched as if to ward off another blow when there was no enemy, not even life. When there was only the weeping mother who could not be responsible for this miscarriage, there was blood upon the child's face. She had hardly dared to look at the child for fear of it might say something. The fisherman had not mentioned this since, though she had expected him to do so. He had not shown any sign of remembering, so she had acted as if it had not happened. But when it happened, he had said that he could see that she had not been dreaming these things as other people thought. But he had said that he was not sure he himself was not dreaming or had not had a sunstroke, for just before this happened, something else had happened. So she had got him off on a strange train of thought. While dangling a red geranium for bait in a still pool, he had seen another stillborn almost exactly like this, and it had looked like Esther Longtree, or had looked like a gunny sack and bundle of leaves. So he must have been dreaming, he guessed, and then he had heard this other thing cry, but it could not have cried, for it was born silent, wearing its birth veil like a bridal veil. And there was Esther Longtree, all covered over with mud and brambles and leaves, crying, for she had not wanted to look at it, and she was afraid that it might say something. She wanted to dig a hole in the mud and put it in, but the fisherman had wanted to put it into the river with the other one so that it could be washed away. They had wrapped it in a gunny sack. They had thrown the stillborn into the river above the dam where the current was rapid, the water churning to foam, and she had not worried for fear of seeing it again, and had not supposed it could be used as a witness or something, and had supposed she was free of it, and then she could ask it no questions. The turmoil of the experience had permitted oblivion in other pregnancies, so as days had passed and nothing had been said, she had supposed that the stillborn must have been carried away by the river, perhaps clear to the Gulf of Mexico, or that it was eaten by a diving bird or fishes, for if it had been caught upon a trailing willow branch or vine or swept into some smaller dry stream, or if it had been fished up elsewhere there had been no news of this or of other stillborn falling like snow in the wind. Nothing was brought to light that it had been hidden, only she would have recognized it anyhow, so she had been safe and her conscience clear about this baby whom she had forced to be born because it was already dead and heavy inside. She had forgotten about it, the whole affair, of course, what with others coming so fast when this had come so slow and her heart leaking and the fathers who would bear no fruit or bud and working here and planning for the future. She had gotten used to these losses finally. And anyhow, in this case, she could not have told who the father was, she having no recollection of the event even then, though perhaps it had been a seed planted years earlier, some older pregnancy repeating itself in her womb, for all she knew now. But yet, of course, as she thought back, it could have been the broom salesman's offspring, for it looked like him when it was born, having a wrinkled brow and luminosity and gauze. But there was something about it that was different from the other stillborn, for it did not come back with them, and she did not see it among the others. It just faded out of her mind completely for years. Yet after so many years, it started coming again, slow, slow, nothing could stop it. Nothing, nothing, nothing she could do. It came only at night, and it came alone. It would awaken her from her deepest dreams. It was like a cat prowling among birds, among shadows of birds where no birds were, and she wished it would leave her alone so she could get her sleep and gather her strength from the air. She sweated so at night, her belly roared. Why would this old stillborn not go to its father, whoever the father was? Why would it come to her? As if she had always been alone in this, and this was her only child. She could tell that it was different from the others, and that it was the others too. It would awaken her with her own cries, her stomach heaving with nausea, a splash inside, the diving bird, the stillborn coming again. Why would it not go seek out its father? It would come back to her night after night as her pregnancy advanced. It would not answer any question. It would always be the same. It would always be different. Sometimes it was a mud baby. Sometimes it was a seed that swelled into a star, and it was everywhere in the darkness. It was ugly, and it was beautiful. It was growing even in death. It would spread its fingers wide. It would come in through the bedroom window and stand at the foot of her bed. It was glass, twigs, brambles, mud, sand, starlight. And it was a dead baby, too, with spreading fingers. Sometimes she would dream that the river had overflowed its banks and was sweeping through the open windows of her bedroom, burying this dead baby upon the flood, and the dead baby was hers. But when she would awaken, always when she would awaken, there would be no flood, but the watery moonlight, the rocking chair, the marble slab upon the bureau. She would not know how it could have happened, and yet this dead baby who had grown and who was double-chinned, and who was mud and who was brambles, would come floating back to her in the roar of dreams, always the same, always different, teasing and tormenting her with uncertainty, confusing her in her maternal pride. For it was bigger in death than it had been in life, and it was all covered with mud, a mud baby, its features being enlarged, puffy, swollen, and its face spotted with awful starlight, which was not starlight. Sometimes it was walking, whistling like the policeman on his beat. Sometimes it was not walking. Sometimes it was only lying still in a long boat that was a coffin without a prow, a coffin on the waters, and it was naked except for white ribbons streaming like umbilical cords and a funeral wreath hanging. hanging from its navel to hide its male organs from the moonlight and the starlight and her. Even when it was walking, there was that funeral wreath hanging between its legs, so she could tell that it belonged to her, and it was the policeman's son. Her father was the bother, and she was afraid, for it seemed to be the only one, giving the lie to all the others, and yet she could not imagine how her father could have been the father. Alone in the watery darkness, she would listen, but there was no voice. She would watch, wide-eyed, sleeping, but there were only a beam of moonlight, a white curtain in the wind, a rocking chair. How could her father be the father? Must have been true in her dreams, for no one else but herself and her father had such big feet as this little policeman, with the funeral wreath hanging, though sometimes, of course, all would change, and it would seem to be hanging from her, this funeral wreath with streamers, and all the mourners were entering in through the ivory portals upon some cold, drizzly night. So she could not even move. That was when she might go back to sleep. Getting so heavy, she would dream sometimes it was a marble statue in her womb, but she had only passed a cobweb. If only she could be sure it was not her imagination. But when she would reach out her clammy hands in the dark coil river of sleep and death and abundance, there was nobody, for the little fellow would float away into the murky starlight, which was not starlight, leaving no sign, just like the others, no sign but a tear of hers, and her tears were her children, causing this great increase of size, this nausea, this happiness. She would awaken crying. There would be only the white curtain rustling and the crunch of a distant pebble where perhaps some little window peeper walked, having peeped in upon his mother and her own cry, awakening her out of an awful dream. She would crawl on her hands and knees, her head roaring with hunger, would bite, snap, cry. Oh, she was mulish, and she was pregnant, and she had no way of knowing which of her children were real. And all she hoped was that her parents would not find her out, for they were on their honeymoon, and the bride was blushing, perhaps not taken yet. Anyhow, she had a routine like this in the night's darkness, or crawling upon all fours, white, naked, snapping, biting, biting in old rosebuds, pulling her hair, doing bending exercises, reading a book in the moonlight, waiting for the father, waiting for the mother, waiting for the dawn, pinching, slapping, talking, walking, eating graham crackers or apples, which were hidden everywhere, and hoping her mother would not be peeping in through the keyhole. Sometimes would go back to sleep. Sometimes would feed the hungry, wet mouth, her own mouth, lifting her breasts, for there was no other mouth but hers, nuzzling against her breasts. Cold, livid, tortured, but sweet, sweet, and she would bite, and then would nurse her right hand to still its swelling, and then would fit two wedding rings upon her nipples, and then would walk the floor in cold starlight, and then would wait for dawn, and always, always, no matter what else happened, would remember the tall child in the cold starlight, he who would not come indoors, her other child, one who whistled in the window, one who wore no funeral wreath, one who was not dead, one who called her mother, one who was hungry but who would not eat, one for whose sake she had worked in the restaurant where there was food, one for whom she sat out on the window sill each night, especially in the sub-zero weather. Food, food, cold cereal, old bones, toast stolen from the restaurant, apples, cheese, anything to tempt him. But there was never the print of a tooth, only the sooty snow had fallen, only the blackbirds had grown fatter. And that was why her mother would fuss so much, wondering why she would hide bread under her pillow and apples everywhere and thus attract the rats, the mice, the ants. For her mother did not know that she was trying to attract her eldest son, her little boy who would not come in out of the darkness, who would not eat, who said he did not trust his mother. But she would try just the same, and at dawn would hear the policeman's whistle, her father coming home with slow footsteps, and at dawn would sleep, and at dawn would hear the lovebirds crying for their mother. She was a waitress at night and a waitress by day. She was always feeding someone. If only her plans and dreams would now be realized, she would not quarrel with what was past. So that was why she did not wish to face the jury. Something had always been wrong and incomplete, even when she was a child, mean and ugly and awkward. Nothing had been washed away. Something had been wrong with her plans. So lately she had begun to wonder if there was an old evidence to be produced against her. Perhaps this child had floated in her dreams. Perhaps he caught against a trailing willow bough after all. She was always watching. When she walked along the river banks, there was nothing she had found. No one but herself would know exactly where the other children were hidden, and she was safe, perhaps. And she was not safe, perhaps, but she had been kind to the feathers, the flowers, the vines, the clouds, the little shadow boxer, him not yet born. The little shadow boxer evading her was hidden under her heart. He swam around so. She could feel him, but she could not touch him. He was heavy, and he was light as snow. She would never touch the little shadow boxer, whoever he was or might be. But searching for him with her searching finger in the peaceful, long-drawn moments, cold and still and distant, as the far water splashed and the icy flows moved inside her womb like great white birds with folded wings. She was the poles, she guessed, the north, the south, but she kept away from the poles. And she ate geraniums and paper and string, and she teased the salesman, and she loved her father from a distance, even though he was the night policeman in separated couples. He trusted her, took her part in every argument with her mother, whose temper was not always even, whose little hands had stung like nettles upon her cheeks when she was young and stubborn as a mule in the mud. Who was the father of the little shadow boxer? She had told herself that this had been placed in her body long ago, that it could have been placed there by any number of the dying fathers. Her inaccuracies were beautiful to her, for without them, what would she be? Just a dumb waitress, an articulate gasping, groaning? She did not want to be disturbed. She would fight like mad if they came to get her. Who else had borne the misery which gave such happiness? She would fight like mad if they came to get her. Oh. Who else had borne the misery which gave such happiness? She was the one that was justified in the eyes of the living, she guessed, no matter what people said. If she did not have to go to trial now because of some old miscarriage which she did not wish to confess to, she'd been pregnant like a swan flying out of a swan. If she did not have a new miscarriage because of another embarrassment, she would be all right in every way. Increasing in fleshy size, shining within, giving birth or not in a fit as the occasion demanded. And without repercussions or consequences or opinions or echoes of the dead past to disturb her brain, to make her cry, she hoped. She would forget everything when she was a mother. She would not be like her mother, remembering everything. She would be grateful and proud and silent and would make no explanations that would not be satisfactory. As it was, it seemed unfair that she should have so many miscarriages, and the only way she could justify them was to think that she would still have a carriage. In other words, why should she have the miscarriages, the misconceived, the misbegotten, all the time, while other women had the carriages, it seemed to her. The baby carriages that they would push along the street, and all she had was her womb swelling. She had the miscarriages, and the other women had the carriages, the wedding rings, the funerals, the anniversaries, the grateful children, while she, Esther Longtree, struggled on here, having almost nothing to show for her struggle. Why should other women have everything she yearned for? Yet it might still not be too late, if only she could get through this pregnancy and didn't have to go to court to produce those children who had faded like mist in sunlight. And now she might be accused of murder. If only she had not written to that awful detective to tell him he was a father when it had already been another stillborn or two or three when it was already too late. She had said that it was still to be born, but it was already stillborn, something that looked like him, too, a drifting ectoplasm, something that had looked like a window curtain, she recalled, a little narrow-shouldered, bloody detective that had fallen to the white grass with sightless eyes, and had not even spoken her name, and had not pointed its accusing finger at her, but had accused the sky, and the wind, and the grass. Everything had been so vague at the time, or were there many times, and all seemed one to her. She could still remember it as if it were only yesterday, the little detective, something tugging at her when she walked out of doors, something in the roaring wind when she lay in the grass. Could still remember, but what if, in her great distress, she had forgotten to cut the umbilical cord? Then what? What? What evidence was attached to her? What with her child? Perhaps it was something joyous attached to her, pulling at her umbilical cord. Was she a maypole or what? Were the children dancing around her, the joyous children, she would wonder, hearing their shrieks of tiny elfin laughter? The only anguish would be the anguish of knowing entirely what was so. A woman of her character preferred uncertainty, the great question mark, and she was uncertain, hearing the cracked church bells ringing when she gave birth. How could she be certain what had been so? Sometimes it seemed to her that the detective's children lived just as she had written to him, and that she ought to try to help him find them, the fat, rosy children who were not to be found. If she did not produce them, then he would prove that she had killed them, even if there was no corpses derelicti, for he had the evidence. That was what he wrote to her, threateningly, when all her alibis had been given out and had added up to murder and sudden death. She had described such mercurial leaping children who changed their ages, as she wrote, who were both healthy and sick, who cried for their father and did not ask for him. So she guessed it was her fault. This misunderstanding, which could not be cleared up in the courtroom, which would only get worse no matter how her trial went, for she would be making faces at the jury, and she would be winking at all the fathers, some that were alive and some that were dead, and all who were sterile. She was the stubborn kind, mulish, and would make no explanations unless one fell from her into a pool of water, and then they would draw their own conclusions, and they would accuse her of having done away with all the other children who would be invisible. She really could not be bothered by these little details so irksome in this detective's matrimonial adventure, which was not her business, for it was not her business if his wife said that he was sterile, and if he said his wife was sterile, why did they get married? Vester could decide, she would not decide. Maybe, of course, both husband and wife were cold, so why should he produce these children even if she could and let them be the evidence of life? If only her past had not been so complicated by other children, other fathers, she would just have laughed at this, would have whistled in the dark. But she was afraid that if she did not produce these three, then they would go around looking all over the landscape for them, looking under every bush, and what if they found some other derelict, a bloodstained leaf, some other murder, and blamed it on her, because it would be to their convenience to do so. Why should she have to get mixed up in this detective's matrimonial adventure? After all, she was the deserted woman. He had deserted her. He had left her like an empty house. He had not asked her any questions. Now he wanted to prove that she had murdered his children. Of course, if it were just this alone, she could have faced it, could have bluffed her way through. There had been so many other mysteries, and this was what brought them all together. The broom salesman offspring, stiff as a broom, the soap salesman soap baby, the little detective falling upon the bare ground scabby with snow. In fact, it seemed to her now that there had been several little detectives falling on the ground when the cold, cruel wind sighed around Esther Longtree. For she was made pregnant once by a man. She was always bearing his children ever afterward, and that was why it had been so monotonous for several years when things were almost right but entirely wrong. Yet, why worry? She had never been so advanced in her pregnancy as now, having no miscarriages anymore, but only this pounding under her heart. Only these sparks in her womb, only these fireflies, these shadows trembling like dragonflies. No worries, no worries of her own in the world of this creation. It was the world of this creation that was wrong, O'Leary said, not hers. So she was happier than she had ever been, if only the detective did not come poking around here again, looking for proof or evidence to produce against her exhibits A, B, C, a long gold hair, a fingernail, a foot, exhibit D, a bloody leaf, cold cereal, or a bird's egg, exhibits Q, X, Y, Z, the alphabet, rubber doll, a feather, a father, two wedding rings, an inquest, the doctor, the shadows, and nothing, nothing. Why would anyone want to bother a poor creature like her, Esther Longtree, especially when there was going to be another war soon, killing all the men and some of the children, and one or two old murders should not have mattered so much, especially if it was nothing murdered.